Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. And recently, it was my very great pleasure to interview Danny Cahill. In this interview, you'll hear Danny and I debating whether or not the phone is still the most important, most relevant tool in the toolkit of the modern recruiter. Danny started his recruiting career right out of college at Hobson Associates. He became its Rookie of the Year and went on to become a top producer and the general manager by the age of 26. At 27, he bought the company and built it into one of the country's largest search firms. Danny was the educational chairperson of the Pinnacle Society, 75 of the highest achievers in the industry. And he also owns and runs AccordingToDanny.com, an online training company dedicated to enhancing the skills of recruiters worldwide. He's a sought-after keynote speaker and, in fact, was elected to the Knapp's Hall of Fame in 2006. Danny's written several successful books, including Harper's Rules was his first book. His second book was Aging Disgracefully. And his latest book, How to Quit Golf and Get Your Life Back, is being released on the 5th of March. It's available on Amazon and at other major booksellers now. So let's dive into the interview. Danny, it's an honor to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Great to talk to you. How are you?
Fantastic. Yeah. So last time, well, the first and only time that we've met was at the Pinnacle Society Conference in Savannah last year. And so it was fun to get to see you in person because I've known of you for, you know, many, many years, but not had the pleasure of meeting you. And you gave a fantastic talk, which was called Phone, Friend or Foe. And I really enjoyed that. Could you give a little flavor of what that talk was all about?
Yeah. You know, I think I sense an identity crisis in the recruiting industry right now is, I guess, what I was feeling. And, you know, you've been at several Pinnacle Society meetings, so it's a great audience to discuss whatever you're feeling from a hunch or intuitive basis. And I think you could feel it. It was palpable in that room that day. And I hear it every day from the subscribers. There's this deep sense of uncertainty, you know, what the Greeks called aporia. At first you think, well, it's just the economic uncertainty. And, you know, recession, great market, pandemic, phenomenal market, turbulent market, Fed interest rate issues. So we know how to deal with economic uncertainties, but this is deeper. And I felt it for the last couple of years. And I think a part of it, I finally got my finger on, which is a lot of people who are successful in recruiting. I mean, you've been at it, what, 20 years? I feel like I've heard your name for 20 years. So 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, which is what a lot of the top producers have for a tenure. I think we forget how the phone was part of their identity. It wasn't just a tool they used in order to be effective recruiters. So, okay, so now the tools are different. So why can't they just get over it and let the phone go and just start using, you know, HubSpot? Why not? Why can't we do that? We certainly did it when LinkedIn and social media replaced job boards. Why are we all of a sudden so afraid to let go of this thing that used to be on our desk and is now in our pocket? But we are. And I feel that because I remember, you know, I remember both as a kid, people forget what it's like. It's like, okay, you're sitting in your house at night. And if you're in my house, you have four siblings. And the phone rings. Who's it for? The phone's ringing. Pick up the phone. Hurry, hurry. Someone wants us. Someone needs us. Who could that be for? And I was like, relax. It's for me. I'm the most popular kid in high school. It's for me. Everybody settle down. But the phone had a sense of built-in importance and urgency. So then you take it from your formative years into your professional life. And this business, which a lot of us started right after college, right? Because it's a low base, high commission business and low barriers of entry. So it was an easy job to get into and extremely hard to do well at. And the way that most people decided whether you were good or bad, which then becomes whether you're a good human or a bad human, is, do you have the guts to pick up this thing, this phone thing, and call people who don't know you're going to call? Do you have the testosterone, the chutzpah, you know, you fill in the adjective. Do you have what it takes to do that? And then if it turns out you do, oh my God, you get all the normal social responses that we love. We get attention, we get money, we get little plastic trophies that we put on library shelves. We are the ones who are unafraid. We have this sort of understanding of the world is tough. And those of us who are make phone calls understand the world. And those of you who are afraid to make phone calls don't. And you will fail and I will succeed. And it's Darwinian and it's how it should work. And then all of a sudden, and let's face it, it took decades, but it feels so fast to people who grew up that way. And now this singular skill that made you special, that everybody lauded you for, appears to be useless, appears to no longer be relevant. And I think it goes deeper than just, well, there's better tools now and you can build more with less. You don't have to have just the phone. While that may be, from a business point of view, a quote-unquote solution, it's deeply depressing to people who grew up with the phone as their identity. So I think it goes much deeper than just the, hey, it's an old tool, it doesn't work as well, we got new tools, let it go. I find recruiters have a really hard time letting it go.
I wonder if partly it's a generational issue, because like you described growing up and the phone would ring, the phone, because there was only one, right? It was a landline, and it probably had one of those long cords. Like we had a phone in our kitchen, and my parents had one in their bedroom, but the one in our kitchen had one of those really long cords that stretched down the hallway. And that's how, and I would talk for hours with my friends, girlfriends, you know, every evening. That was your, you know, you would talk on the phone. My teenage kids never talk on the phone, not even to their friends. They either text each other back and forth or message on Snapchat or Instagram or what have you. I never hear them talking to other kids on the phone. So I wonder if it's, you know, partly there's, you know, there's almost like they don't have that skill anymore.
Oh, there's no question that's a big part of it. But what I find really interesting is this idea that, well, is it that they don't have the skill? So if you're cynical, like a lot of the senior people that I'm talking about who sort of had their identity at risk. So they go, oh, these young people, they don't get it. You know, they don't have the skills. They don't have the human interaction capabilities. They're not empathic. I think that's all crap. I really do. You would know better than I, because I don't have teenagers, but I've certainly had a lot of girlfriends with young kids, and I was sort of uber stepdad. So I understand what you're talking about. They literally don't know what they don't know. So in other words, I think a lot of young people see it as inefficient. I mean, if you look at it from their perspective, it's this sort of blunt form of communication, right? It seems like it's an old school way to do something. In other words, if I'm going to call 10 people, I have to call 10 people, right? But if I send a group text, well, I hit multiple people at once. And unlike you guys who have to figure out what to say, I can put in photos and links and funny GIFs and bit emojis. And they just see it as completely different and better. Like they don't buy that argument.
I have trouble accepting the better part because, now, by the way, the kids, I'm not saying they don't have social skills. They're very good in person, carrying a conversation, but it's the phone in particular. They seem to have a mind block too, where it feels awkward and strange to them to carry on a conversation in that medium. But,
The phone is very intense to them, Mark.
Say more about that.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, when I started in the business, and I tell this to rookies. I just started some rookies 2 weeks ago. And I tell them, you know, I made 150 cold calls a day. And they said, wow, that's a lot of calls. Like, I wouldn't want them to make 150 calls a day. I want everybody in your audience to understand that I'm not advocating that. If you made 150 calls a day today and sent no emails, no texts, and no email blasts out, you will starve, no question. But when I made 150 calls a day in the early 80s, the answer to the question, how many people did I talk to, was 150.
Right.
So think about the ramifications of that. Either I got the manufacturing manager I was trying to get on the phone, but normally I got an operator who answers the phone for the company. And now I have to beat that gatekeeper. I have to get her to transfer
me. That was
me.
A whole fun.
That was a skill set.
Yeah, I used to train people how to get past the gatekeeper.
I hated giving up my gatekeeping training seminar because it was wild and funny and I would role play it and I would do it live.
Yeah.
But you had to beat the gatekeeper and then you got that person's admin and then you had to beat her, and it was her back then. I don't mean to be sexist. And then you finally got this guy on the phone. So I spoke to 150 calls, resulted in not just 150 conversations, but 450, really, if you count the two gatekeepers I had to get. So within 6 months of doing that, I had a level of acumen and phone skills and lack of fear that it would literally take years now to get. You would have to be in the business, I'm making it up, 5 years to replicate the same amount of experience I had with the phone. So the phone is anxiety driven for people. Like, they're not as skilled, but not because they're not as good as people or they're less empathic or they're spoiled or entitled and all this crap that the millennials get from people like us. It's that they simply don't have the reps. They don't have the reps. And there is no way they will ever get the reps. So that's where I was coming into this.
Yeah. So on the efficiency thing, I was just doing some number crunching before our call. So when I was a recruiter, call attempt to reaching your decision maker, I reckon it was about 30% of the time. So I'd make 10 calls. I'd have 3 decision maker conversations. Now you have to do 20 dials to have 1 conversation. So that's like a 5% call attempt to accept, you know, connect ratio versus, so you need to dial 100 people to have 5 conversations instead of just, you know, 10 or 15 or so. So that just feels hugely inefficient. And it is like, what's the point of sitting there for hours and hours and you have 2 conversations? That doesn't seem like a great use of time.
No, it isn't. And that's why I said, if you did just that, I think you would starve. And the other thing that people do, they get that 5% response rate. If we're talking about the client side, by the way, the client side, I think you're right. It's about 5%. But it's going to be 5% if you are going into a company's website or Zoom info or any database that you pay for, and it gives me Mark Whitby's phone number. Well, what is that phone number? It's the office phone number, which Mark Whitby is never, ever answering ever.
So yeah, we need the mobile.
Right. So if you get the mobile phones through things like Swordfish or Lucia or Chatterbox, there's a bunch of different ways to get it. All of a sudden, it kicks up to 10%, 15%, especially if you have some good messaging. But I think you're right in the sense that one of the things that I teach now, and by the way, you have to make a distinction between client and candidate, because your response rate on candidate should be around 25% higher and greater, right? Yeah. So the best recruiters are closer to 50. The average recruiter is around 25. So you have to make that distinction. But what's clear to the modern recruiter, and this happens in my office every single day, is, and this is sort of another reason why the identity gets lost, because this sense of I'm this fearless person who just comes in the morning, gets a list of 100 companies who don't know who the hell I am, and through my energy and charisma and salesmanship, you know, Willie Loman, a shoe shine and a smile, getting on the morning train and going to sell my brushes, There was a thrill, an adventure to that. There's a reason why things like Yellowstone are so popular on TV. There's this sense of experience and an energy that comes from that. Well, okay, that you really have to let go, because the way to do it now is to say, oh no, I'm not calling just anybody. What you and I used to be told is planning time, which is really just taking a list of companies from a computer list and putting it on a piece of paper, you know, a Morgan planner, right? And then making calls. Well, now that is, that time is spent targeting companies. Yeah. Which company should I call? Who's in my space? Where do I have candidates that would match that company? Where do I really understand their value prop, product, and service? Who have I had experience and success with before? Okay, I got 25 companies. Now, I take those 25 companies. Do I call them? Yes. But now they enter into my cadence. So they get a call, they get an email, they get an in-mail message. And I know you espouse this too. I'm not as pure about it as you are. I've heard people talk about, oh, I don't do much calling. I just go into LinkedIn and I follow somebody and I stay in touch with them and I post content every day. And then magically these jobs come to me. When I actually mentor these people individually, I see where their jobs come from. And I'm sorry, very few of them come from that. What it comes from is this cadence of, I targeted you, I called you, I sent an email, I do follow you, now I send a text, now I send another phone call. And right around the fourth, fifth, sixth contact, that person sees, oh, it's Whitby again, I just got his email, oh hell, and you pick up the phone. And you may get a job from doing that. So the modern way of taking that seemed like grossly inefficient, 100 calls into the ether getting nothing, and 5% is for good recruiters. A lot of them are getting 0%. But now if you make that 25 companies that I target on a 2 or 3 week basis, and by the way, it's multiple touches to a variety of C and V level people within those companies, you get them 5 to 6 contacts or outreaches each over a 2 week period. Either you get something or you don't. You get nothing, you put it away for a month, you do it again. Mm-hmm. That works. That
definitely
works.
Definitely.
And you know, I don't know if you've done anything with them, but we are beta testing Source Whale. And they're simply a content marketing company, and there's plenty of them, and there's a lot of vendors that are at Pinnacle meetings. But we tried Source Whale as a beta, and when they were selling me, I wanted to see, frankly, how honest they'd be, because if they're going to tell me it's all about email outreach, I'm going to hang up, because I know where my job orders came from in 23 at my firm. Still, the majority of our jobs, the number one way we get jobs is through MPC marketing calls. And second would be existing clients. Third would be intelligence from candidates. Fourth would be going to actual trade shows within our target markets. And the Source Whale VP, to his credit, said, look, we've got the data. 60% of what they call meetings, which for us would be a client intake or send out, any sort of positive sale, 60% of those meetings come from phone calls. Mm-hmm. The purpose of their business is to make your phone calls stand out because you've contacted them through multiple channels and multiple touches.
Exactly.
60%. So that's why I say, and I don't say this as a gift to people who are having an identity crisis who say, what good is it? You know, and these people can spiral. I mean, you know, as well as I do, Mark, top recruiters are top recruiters because there are a lot of things, right? They're super smart. They're adaptive. They're super empathic. They're resilient. They're also super moody and crazy neurotic. Oh my God. And they can bottom out and spiral. It is so hard. And I have the pleasure of having a lot of them work for me. It's hard for me to manage top recruiters because I can't say anything to them when they screw up that is anywhere near as vicious as what they're saying to themselves in their head, right? So I spend my time saying, they're there, patting them on the back, because I know they're saying, you worthless piece of crap. The business has passed you by. What you used to do isn't relevant anymore. And this is where, and I said this at the meeting in Pinnacle that you heard, I think there is a lot of reasons to say that your skill is more important than ever. Because you know, if we think about this in a fatalistic way, and you know, we're one economic upturn away from all of this being nonsense and anything you do will work, right? But if you know that talent acquisition is here to stay, and that they are taking a much more aggressive approach than they used to, they're not just failed recruiters or ex-admin people being told to recruit. They're investing heavy in tech solutions. They're going to invest more money faster in AI-enhanced solutions than you can afford to in your tiny little search firm. So if we know that they're going to be more aggressive and they're going to fill some of the jobs, then saying to yourself, well, I have to beat them at their game and get an even better email marketing tool or send even sexier ChatGPT-enabled messaging. No. In fact, if this helps you with your identity crisis, the thing that made you great is actually going to be more important than ever, because you're not someone who just makes phone calls. The phone is your conduit to who you really are, which is a storyteller, a persuader, an enabler of aspiration. We sell dreams. That's what we do. And companies are going to always use us if you have a level of contact and subject matter expertise so that I feel like you can get candidates I can't get in a faster way. They'll always use search firms for jobs that they see as important. So they tend to use people like us for higher level jobs, jobs that are revenue producing, right? And TalentAct will always be sort of generalist because they have to fill a lot of different jobs. It's only the largest companies that can afford to have a sales TalentAct team and an IT TalentAct team. For the most part, it's TalentAct filling an admin one day, an underwriter the next day, and they're not 100% sure which. So they will go after some subject matter experts like you and I to fill mission critical positions. And you're going to be able to fill those because of your skill on the phone. And I don't say right. that, I don't say that casually. I really believe that because I hear the calls. And if you use the phone, your level of depth is greater. You can call out people's BS more on the phone because you're hearing them. And when I say the phone, a Zoom call like this, well, we won't do a client intake anymore without it being a Zoom call. If you won't get on the phone and do a video call with me, then you're not serious about hiring this person. Same with candidates. I also believe the phone has some power, right? The power of the pause, right? The power of someone sighing. You know, the thing about texts, that young people like texts because texts can be filtered. Texts can be edited, right? You can wait and you can make a draft of it. Whereas with the phone, you can't skim a phone call, right? Mm-hmm. You're on it. You're on the hot seat. It's very similar to the difference between live theater in New York and going seeing a movie on Netflix. Like, if you go to that performance tonight at the St. James Theater in Manhattan, whatever show you see tonight is a one-of-a-kind experience. That particular show will never happen again. You and I could do this this podcast again tomorrow and again the third day, but the one we do today is a one-of-a-kind experience. We'll never experience it exactly the same way again. And that's what the phone is. It's a one-of-a-kind experience with less calculation and more candor, right? When what I tell my people is, where there is typing, there is no trust.
Yeah, absolutely. Like hearing, as you say, the pause or the sigh, like you can hear someone's tonality and pick up. You can read the nonverbal cues to know when they're saying yes, but really they have reservations or that there's something else they're not telling you. You can sense that on the phone or on a Zoom call, which you definitely can't get in an email.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, 100%. think about the young people like to use the word seriously, right? But seriously can be an affirmation. So if you read an email and you say, listen, Mark, I know you wanted 100,000 in the base and I asked for it, but they said they really couldn't do that because of wage structure complications. And the response was, seriously? Now, is that a seriously? Like, what kind of company can't pay me 100,000? Or is it seriously? Affirmation. I don't know. But if I got you on the phone, I would know, because when there is no hearing, there is less heart, right? I can tell what you're feeling on the phone, right? And so I tell people this stuff because I think you should relax a little bit. Your skill is not going away. What's really bizarre, because it's very much like, you know, the clothes that I wore in the 80s and 90s, like high-waisted jeans are coming back. Like, really? Make it stop, right? So things keep coming back and back. And I'm not trying to put the phone in that category, but it is wild how, since very few recruiters are making phone calls, so it's funny how you and I are talking about the calls you and I used to make and how it's 5% now. Well, it's gotten to the point where a lot of the recruiting firms, I was just out west and I saw a few different search firms in my travels doing some coaching, and there's nobody making phone calls in these cubicles.
Yes,
I sat there for hours.
That's true.
So it's a lie, right? It's the phone doesn't work anymore. Well, you know what? Why don't you try it and then let's talk about it? Instead, they've heard it doesn't work. They don't try it. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I'm like, great, because I ask VPs of TalentAcq and our clients all the time, how many calls do you get a week from a recruiter? And it's funny. I mean, I get presidents of companies saying, you know, I wondered what happened to you guys. Because I used to get I used to get 5 or 10 a day.
Okay.
Now if I get one a month, it's amazing. One a month. And our data is, according to Danny Members, is that most recruiters making prospecting calls, trying to get job orders, attempt to reach a prospect one time, regardless of the mode of communication.
Wow.
One time. So don't tell me that it doesn't work. You don't know what works. You don't know what works.
Danny, let me reflect on a couple of things you've mentioned. One is 100%. Our clients tell us that the benefit, or the biggest benefit these days of making the call, is that no one else is doing it. So when you do get through to someone, it's a real differentiator, and you're able to reach candidates that other recruiters can't, because people aren't calling and you're the one who actually managed to get a hold of them. So I do think there's something to that. Danny, I had a really interesting guy on the podcast a couple of months back called Alex Elliott, and he's a young guy. He's already sold his first staffing firm for £20 million. He's now building an IT sales recruiting firm. So, you know, overlapping some of the markets that you're in, but he's based here in the UK. He had an interesting strategy, which is they're recruiting for SaaS software companies, and he's modeling his sales and marketing approach on the software companies and how they're scaling so rapidly. And he's like, you know, they have SDRs, sales development reps, who are cold calling all day. They do inbound. And you even look at, you mentioned the company HubSpot. The companies that promote inbound marketing have their own outbound sales teams, right? So his philosophy is exactly what you said earlier. It's multi-touch, multi-channel. You know, if you want to maximize your sales, you need to leverage every channel at your disposal, and you have to follow up multiple times. So it's email sequences, LinkedIn touches, phone calls, etc. And when his team members say, you know, people aren't going to answer the phone, or they're not picking up, he's like, how many times did you try? Once. Okay, well, try four more times, and then, you know, move on to the next prospect. So software companies are doing it. Why not recruiters?
Yeah. And I don't know Alex, and it sounds like he's obviously amazingly successful. As you said, we're in the software space, and you could go back, I want to say 6 years ago at NAPS, that was my keynote. So that literally was my keynote. My keynote was, I place people with software companies, and who gets the job orders? My best recruiters, because they make marketing calls. But, you know, if you think about this, it's kind of weird. In other words, and I wish I was smart enough to come up with this myself, but one of my best recruiters has been with me 30 years, Beth Schneider, got into a situation where I called the client to try to help her close a deal. And as I was talking to the client, who was a great guy, we figured out the situation. And then he said to me, hey, well, I got you. Why does Beth call me to get my business. She already has my business. And I went into my rant about how, well, we don't take clients for granted. And Beth, you know, wants to make sure that you're happy. And it's all about being client-centric and the client experience. And he said, oh, save that crap. That's not what I'm asking you. Why does Beth call me? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, he was in Los Angeles. He said, I'm going to a Laker game tonight. I promise you that if they had LeBron James selling the popcorn in the stands, that guy could sell a lot more popcorn than whoever it is they're going to have wandering around the stands. It'd be like, hey, LeBron, yeah, I want some popcorn. Come on over. But they don't have LeBron selling popcorn because you really want LeBron getting his pregame treatment and practicing layups, okay? So why do you take your LeBron James and have her sell popcorn? And so if you look at a typical software sales company, they have what they call BDRs, biz dev reps, and their job is simply to say, hi, Mr. Whitby, I'm with Hobson Associates. I work for Beth Schneider. We know that there's 3.7% unemployment and staffing is a problem. Would you like to have a conversation with one of our senior recruiters? Now, that was adapted by us years ago, and I think a lot of people who are in According to Danny have adopted it. I will say, and kudos to Alex if he's able to get high levels of results, when the market toughens, BDRs struggle because they don't have the connections, they don't have the salesmanship. So all due respect, that's a really good market approach. And we cut it back in 23. We'll add it again if the market gets hot. But it doesn't change the overall idea that, as you say, and this is ironic because this week was I had a birthday, but the phone has become the birthday card of communication, right? I mean, I got 100 emails from people saying, happy birthday. And I'm like, that's very nice of you to have your LinkedIn set up to go after whoever has a birthday. Like, okay, I'm glad I'm on your automated list. But then I go home and I open the mailbox and there's a couple of cards. And if I think about it, the sentiment is the same. It's no less or more generous. But this
it's more effort, though.
It's more effort. And this person took the time. So I can't help it. I appreciate more the card in the mailbox than the person who sent me an email because LinkedIn reminded him that he should. And the phone tells people that someone has consciously decided to devote time to me. It is the highest compliment nowadays when people get so few phone calls. I promise you, I've had candidates who've said, well, you called me 3 times, so I called you back because I figured it must be important. You called like 3 times.
Right. Exactly. Right? Exactly.
So what used to be considered annoying now becomes, holy shit, this must be important. He called me.
Yes.
Yeah.
The phone call is the birthday card. Yeah, I like that analogy of a communication. Going back to your LeBron James and popcorn story, what do you think of this idea? So we teach our clients how to augment their own team's performance by hiring offshore virtual assistants, usually from the Philippines.
Yes.
And what some of our clients have started doing is hiring the BDRs from the Philippines, doing a similar thing to what you just described, where they don't need to be the world's greatest salesperson. They need to be, you know, motivated, friendly, you know, self-motivated, friendly, and have thick skin and be willing to make dial after dial after dial.
Yes.
And rather than spend their highly paid UK or US, you know, recruiters and salespeople to make 150 calls a day or 50 or however many the number is, they're paying someone in the Philippines to do that and to schedule appointments for the full-time employees.
Yeah.
And they're actually getting some good success with that. And it's not a high percentage thing. Like the number of appointments they get isn't huge, but it is more than paying for itself. Because if you think, so let's say someone books you 3 appointments a week. And they're making 50 calls a day, you know, so 250 calls to get 3 appointments, right? But that's 12 new business appointments per month. You know, if you pick up 1 or 2 searches from that, And then some of those may become repeat clients as well. That's a good ROI, right?
Oh, no question. And I think this problem gets exacerbated when in 21 and 22, when everybody was drunk with success, it was, hey, I'll pay a sourcer $80,000 on a base. Sure. Like I need candidates. And if we bill X, then 80,000 is nothing. And they're right, until there's less job orders and you're still paying your sourcer $80,000. So when you look at the outsource option, it isn't so much, I want to say this the right way because I don't want to offend anybody. I don't know how much more effective they'd be. I'd be surprised if they weren't highly less effective than a trained recruiter here. And I use Philippines offshore people for sourcing. But when we tried it for BD, let's put it this way. It's fast access to suboptimum jobs. There were an awful lot of bogus leads. And I think it depends on the sector, right? So I was just out in Denver working with Nate Zimmerman from Pinnacle, who you know.
Oh, yeah, I know Nate.
Yeah, fantastic kid. But he's in this very, very sophisticated private equity asset allocation market. He gets a client on the phone and, dude, it is just a grilling. Tell me who my three top competitors are. Give me the names of the last three times you filled a CIO job. What do you know about asset allocation? And they'll ask some specific questions. The typical offshore generic, I've got this one script, BDR, is going to get blown away. So I think it's very dependent on level of job and sector.
Yeah, Danny, I think having said that, one thing it has going for it is these guys and girls will outwork, well, what our clients are telling
totally.
Us
totally
is that they outwork the American recruiters, right? And
yes,
you know, and when they actually looked at pipelines, so one of our clients who's really done this successfully,
yeah,
is when they looked at where their pipeline jobs were coming from, the lady in the Philippines was bringing more opportunities to the table than their experienced recruiters. Yeah. And obviously with less market knowledge, less training, etc., but she was putting in the reps, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
She was just outworking.
Yeah. Sure.
Because the other guys are like, oh, I'm busy. I can't do business development today because I've got all these jobs or whatever,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so they were doing a little bit of business development and they were, you know, but she was doing a lot of business development. And so,
yeah,
you know, it worked out in that case.
No, I hear that. And I think that there's a lot to be said for just being scrappy and just making it a numbers game. And, you know, it's funny. I have no problem with the recruiter who, well, I shouldn't say I have no problem. I do have problems with it, but I at least understand the recruiter that says, I didn't get to BD today because I have all these jobs. But what's happening right now is I didn't get to BD today, even though I have no jobs, because I made the choice instead to lie in a fetal position and weep, right?
Oh, dear.
That's what I don't tolerate.
So, Danny, would you, because I'm going to take, we've been arguing for the phone for most of this call,
yes.
But let me just play devil's advocate here, because we have clients who just point blank don't want to do it. They're like, either they're burnt out on the phone or they're younger and they've never done it and they don't want to learn. And right. They're like, but using the methods I'm using, which is, let's say, LinkedIn, email, like, you know, source whale type automation tools, plus, you know, some clever marketing, some content marketing stuff, they are getting, especially like, let's say you're a solo firm, they're getting enough work and they're billing well. Like we have people billing 400, 500, 600K with zero calls, zero. Now I say zero calls, zero cold calls. We should talk in a minute about the phone is still there. It's just not at the top of the funnel. It's in the middle of the funnel, if that makes sense. But let me put that to one side for a second. But there's an argument that is it a choice? Like, yeah, if you like the phone and you're good at it, that's kind of a secret weapon and you can really still use that to your advantage. But it's not the necessity that it once was in order for you to be a successful recruiter. What are your thoughts on that?
I was about to, until your last statement, I would have beaten you sadistically about the face and neck. But when you say it's no longer as necessary as it once was, sure, absolutely. Has it lost some primacy? No question. But that's not how recruiters work, right? Recruiters go from high to super low. It's, you know, it happened when all of a sudden LinkedIn became the thing. It's like, I don't see any point in our CRM any longer. I have LinkedIn. Okay, well, that's not true. And you still need the CRM. The numbers, now I can't speak about the UK, Mark, and I don't know about anything but the domestic market in the US. I have clients over there, but I don't know their numbers as well as I intimately know some of the, according to Danny members, 500 firms in the US. And I track their numbers and I speak to their owners a lot. And I've known them long enough so that we're honest with each other, right? I do think, and this happens at Pinnacle meetings, it happens at any conference, you know, I'm always, that's why I push back against producer panels, because I would sit on them and I would hear people say that they were doing things that I know they weren't doing. And I was like, why are you misleading these people? Just because you want to feel like that's what you should be doing? So I don't think there's any question that the domestic direct hire business was down between 30 and 50% for most firms last year. And I have an awful lot of them, you know, it's where a lot of my mentoring and coaching comes from, panic, just panic. Mm-hmm. So I go in and I say, okay, let me look at the numbers. I look at what they do. I look at where they get their jobs from. And almost every time there's a correlation between how much they decided the phone was worth and their billings. So it's this, I don't want to believe the phone is necessary anymore, maybe because I was no good at it, or there is this going on too. I want to believe that I don't have to do that anymore because it was such a slog, and I want to believe that I've outgrown that. And, you know, so far in this call, we've been talking about the person who lost their identity. There are people who always saw it as a struggle, but did it because it worked, who can't wait to lose that identity.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't want to use the phone anymore. And then when I look at their numbers and I sit down with their recruiters, there's a direct link. And here's a specific example. It got to the point, I think, where by 2021, it literally had inverted. So in other words, it'd be like, even if it was a candidate approach, but certainly on the client approach, where it used to be, I make a call, I follow it up with a voicemail, and then I send an email. It got inverted, where I send an email, then I send an email, and then if I don't hear back from them, I might make one phone call, but oh, I guess I never got to that phone call. So simple fix. I let it get to about, we were down about 19% midway through 23 after having our best 2 years ever, like so many people.
Yeah.
And of course we have a technology team. So the technology team was hard hit, and the technology sector is going to be still struggling in 24. But I simply said, that's going to change. Phone first, then in-mail, then email. I'm okay with you doing all three, but I got to fight you on the order. We've had four consecutive months, no different than the big months we were having in 21 and 22. I can't point to anything else that we changed other than rearranging the priority of the phone. Not saying it's the end-all, be-all. Not saying that there isn't some loss of primacy and there aren't some other tools. But again, Source Whale, 60% of the meetings come from the phone call. I think it's not the game anymore. But if you decide it's not part of your game anymore and you lose skill in it, then yeah, I think you're going to struggle. If you've got people that don't need to do it and are billing $400 to $600, the obstinate me says they could bill $1 million if they used it. But I also, I also understand people that say, I don't need to, and I'm fine with it. And I, you know, one thing I've learned after all these years, Mark, of doing this is, oh my God, there's so many ways of doing this business.
Totally.
And so if it's working for them, God bless them, keep doing it.
Danny, can you say more about the flipping the order? Why do you think the order improved the results by putting phone and then email in email rather than the other way around?
Yeah, well, because I think the phone has some real advantages, and it is direct. You know, people often say, well, email's faster. Oh, no, it's not. I see the email exchanges all the time between clients. Client says, hey, Mark, really appreciated the reach out. Yes, I have a job, but it's 20%. Can you do 20%? And then the email goes back saying, well, here's why I can't do 20%. And then an email comes back a day later saying, how about 22.5%? On a phone call, that would have been 3 minutes.
Right, right. So, Danny, this is the point I was making earlier about top of the funnel versus middle of the funnel. If someone asks you about rates, that's a buying signal, right? We should be immediately calling that person and not trying to answer that question by email. But so I guess my question was, are there more efficient ways to drive some, you know, leads, some nibbles? They're not going to immediately turn into an appointment, but people saying, well, how much do you charge? Or like, you know, tell me more about your MPC. And then the phone becomes the stage where you influence, qualify, and really turn that into an opportunity rather than it being the primary engine for driving top of the funnel.
Yeah, I think one of the distinctions between people who are really good in our business and people who are not is their default setting vis-a-vis the phone. In other words, the top people in the business, and it's not just calling clients. Like, I mentor some of the top people in Pinnacle, and it's hilarious. Like I said, I was out to see Nate 2 weeks ago, and he's trying to interview some people. So I'm interviewing his people for him. We're having conversations. And I had to go to a funeral. He had to go to a funeral. And he's like, I'm going to call you at 11:30 today. Good? Like, he's like, I'm done with this. This is taking too long. I need to make something happen. His default setting is let's talk. So you see this response, whether it's in text or email or in-mail, from a lot of great recruiters. The text being, I hear you. When can we talk? Let's jump on a call. And for a lot of recruiters, the default setting is to stay in whatever communication mode you are already in. The best recruiters break the communication mode. I almost don't care which way it goes. Even if you've been talking on the phone, maybe the best way to get this thing to go to the next level is to break the communication mode and send a trenchant email. But the default setting of the best recruiters is to say, yeah, this is phone worthy. And that's really what we're talking 100%. About. What is phone worthy?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the default setting for most recruiters is, if I smell anything here, potential rate question, candidate goes, I don't know if I'm looking. Ooh, you don't know if you're looking? When can we talk about this? You know, a lot of my good recruiters will say, listen, I'll respect your time. I just need 10 minutes. Let's jump on a call. And of course, 10 minutes becomes a half an hour. And that's the other thing that I want to tell junior recruiters who might be listening to this. I see so many people who send me their scripts, and their script is, hi, this is Danny Kale with Hobson Associates. We're one of the leading executive search firms. And do you have time to talk? Okay, you got to let that go. Now, that is something, that's a vestige, right? That comes from when you were a kid and I was a kid, when you were calling somebody and in the middle of their house or in the middle of their company, there's only one phone for the whole department. And so it becomes decorous. It becomes etiquette to say, is this a good time? Well, okay, guess what? That's gone. It is a good time because they picked up.
Yeah.
So don't ask for permission to exist and don't ask a closed-ended question too early. And this ties into, I mean, you and I could talk about this for hours, right? But part of the problem is it becomes a slippery slope. I don't know if you teach basic sales training, but I have a whole sales training part of my business. So there really is almost no point in sales training if you're going to have ChatGPT do a draft, and then you quote-unquote customize it in 2 minutes. And your whole world is, I've got this cadence going out and that cadence going out. But then you have no salesmanship, so you don't know how to ask open-ended questions. You don't know how to isolate an objection. You don't know how to overcome an objection. That's not a skill that you can't do over email, but it's a lot easier to do over the phone. And once you have those skills over the phone, then they do transfer into email. And here's the rub, right? If you try to learn your sales training over email, it doesn't transfer on the phone. And then you get on the phone with some CEO who goes, listen, I just need an answer. 15%, take it or leave it. They don't know what to say. So the phone almost wastes, I shouldn't say that, email almost wastes your sales training, whereas phone allows you to use your sales training.
Absolutely. We're totally on the same page, Danny. The goal is always to get them to the phone. That's, yes. That's where we need to take this. And by call, it could be a Zoom or whatever, right? So I guess the real question is just, does it need to be a cold call to get to that point? Or, could it be a LinkedIn exchange? And then you get a reply and you say, oh, great. When can I call you? Right. And that takes it to the call. The phone still has to be in the process. There's no way around it.
I think it has to be a combination. Most of our new business comes from that cold prospect. Now, when we say cold, again, it's not cold the way it originally was defined, right?
It's because when we started,
we
didn't know anything.
No, about it was a phone book.
We just smiling and dialing. You have no idea who you're calling.
No clue what they did.
They had no LinkedIn profile.
Right. So now you should be able to target companies that are in your niche so that you can drop the names of competitors. I would argue that the cold call followed by an in-mail or email will get you more business in this sort of okay, meh market. Mm-hmm. In a better market, I think it's fine to start with in-mail or email and then see if you can jump on a call. But they're just not jumping on as many calls now, and you can't afford that luxury. I think it's a luxury to start with in-mail or email.
Okay, interesting. I like it. What do you think of the AI? Have you seen the demos, the AI callers, the AIs who call people to sell to them?
No, you're saying AI enhanced telemarketing or
not enhanced. It's literally an AI that is calling.
Yeah.
So we'll put this in the show notes. Google did a demo is about 5 years ago now of an AI calling to make a hair appointment.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious. Now, of course, you don't know how many failed attempts there were. They showed the one that worked beautifully. And the receptionist in this hair salon had no idea they were talking to a machine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because even the inflections of like pausing, going, I don't think that time's going to work, and putting these verbal tics in to make it more human-like. Well, now there are companies who are building these to do telemarketing at scale with a human, like indistinguishable voice from a human. Now, I personally wouldn't use it as it currently stands because they make a lot of mistakes and there's things that are off about it and it doesn't quite work. The demos you see on YouTube are the perfect ones where you go, wow, that's scary.
Yeah.
But 5 years from now, if this thing keeps accelerating, do you ever think about that? Like machines actually making the calls instead of recruiters?
Oh, I'm way ahead of that. Like I'm all for it. I want a neural implant in my brain. Like I'm happy to become half robot, two-thirds robot. I'm ready. but I do think it's going to be a lot longer. This is always the case, right? It's like, this is going to change the world in 3 to 5 years. Well, now it's been a year and plus since ChatGPT first came out, right? Closer to 2 years. And I think it's fair to say it's been a big, is that it? Like it started as a sourcing, messaging sort of content generative sort of thing. And people say, why would we need recruiters anymore? Because this will generate. And then after a few months, you realize, first, as you say, yes, it makes mistakes, which they hilariously call hallucinations. If you ask it to find something on the internet, if you can't find it, it'll make up a certain percentage. And you're right, that'll get better. But within a year, I'd be like, I can tell a ChatGPT message when it's sent to me. And I just, in election years, now everybody's talking about, there's going to be deep fakes where it's a perfect.
Right.
It looks like Joe Biden is saying he's declaring war on Russia, but he's really not. And then they show it. And as you say, this is already the best one they can come up with. They're not showing you the bad ones. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't look or sound anything like Joe Biden. Who is so stupid that they wouldn't know that? Right?
Fair enough.
I don't worry about it so much.
No, I'm not worried. Actually, I do think AI has improved a lot in the last year, even. And
no question.
Like my team members, Julie and Leanne, are all over this, and they're finding ways to leverage it in every part of the recruiting process. But it's always to enhance what the human is doing. It's not, you know, there's no way it could do it without the human driving it, really. But
I think its initial impact that is so awesome actually isn't in coming up with emails. It's fine. I'd let it write a submission or a post, and then customize it, which is just, it becomes sort of an editing tool. But what I think is wonderful about AI is, you know, I was an English major placing engineers, and I had all the chutzpah and salesmanship in the world, but I didn't know what engineers did.
So, right.
So I was helpless for a good year, even though I was rookie of the year. It took a lot of work, and I had to go to libraries and read about engineers. And nowadays, my rookies don't have to pay that price. It's, you know, we just had a job order for a referral manager, and it was a cold call. And I listened to the call, and one of my recruiters was like, "Is there anything we can help you with?" And they said, "Well, we are looking for some referral managers." Well, my rookie had no idea what a referral manager is. If that's me in my rookie year, I'm like, okay, what is that? But he's goes into ChatGPT. What is a referral manager? Can you give me a job posting of a referral manager? And within 5 seconds, he's talking like he knows what he's talking about. Yes. There's the value of AI right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. Danny, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I'm sure this is going to be a popular episode. Appreciate it.
I hope so. Always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
Thanks, Danny. Have an awesome day.
Be well.